Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of July, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, and Bennett Consulting will be here to take a look at the cash grain market and what's been happening on his farm there in Shelby County, Illinois. And as we close out our program together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He says a bit more sunshine and cooler temperatures are in the offing, and we'll do that all during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. They finished up like this. In the corn pit, September contract was up 5.5 cents at 373 1/4. December at 383 1/4, up 5.5 cents. In the March at 394 3/4, 5 3/4 higher. May futures at 401, up 5.5 cents. In July, up 5 1/4 at 406 1/4 for the day. September at 397, that finished 5 3/4 cents higher. August soybeans at $9.90 1/4, 7 1/4 cents higher. September up 7.5 at 964 1/2, and that finished once again 7.5 higher. November beans at 950, up 6 3/4. January at 955 1/4, up 6.5. March soybeans at 953 1/4. Finished 6 cents higher for the day. Soybean meal up $7.10 at $3.57.10. Bean oil up 7 cents at $30.28. Soft red winter wheat in the September contract, 1/4 cent higher at $4.96 1/2 for the day. December at $5.04 1/4, down 1. And the March down 1 3/4 at $5.11 1/4. The hard red at $4.91, down 4 1/4. December at $5.10 3/4, down 4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the August at $145.40. That's 47.5 cents higher. August feeder cattle up, down 50 cents at $210.97 1/2. And August lean hogs for the day at $79.70 were down 15 cents on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Heating oil for the day in the August contract at $1.60 3/10 cents. That's up 0.5 cents. Gasoline in the RBOB at $1.83 3/10, a penny and 1/10 higher for the day. And the crude oil at $48.58 a barrel, down 21 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.50 1/10, a penny and 9 cents higher. And the natural gas at $2.77 1/2, down 8 9/10 cents. In the financials, Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 6 points at 17,676. The dollar up 0.623 at 97.7. And gold futures at $1,088, down $4.90. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 87 degrees, west-northwest winds at 11 to 13 miles an hour. They'll gust to 17 this afternoon. Mostly clear this evening, a low of 63, west winds at 3 to 6, and tomorrow sunny skies and 87 degrees, west winds at 5 to 11, gusting to 16. Friday night, partly cloudy and a low of 63, Saturday sunny and 84, Saturday night, partly cloudy and 63. And on Sunday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly sunny, a high of 82 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low of 66. On Monday, sunny skies and 85. Monday night, more rainfall, maybe. Partly cloudy and 65 degrees. On Tuesday, sunny and 81. Wednesday, a chance of showers again. Partly sunny otherwise. And a high of 79. Stay with us. We'll talk with Mike Tenor at the bottom of the half hour. Take a look at the next couple of weeks. Should find some better growing conditions. Cooler temperatures may move into parts of the Midwest. He'll tell you more about that as we close out our half hour together here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 30th day of July, 2015. On the phone line is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Thanks so much for being with us, Dan. What you see in the marketplace today?
Well, I think for the most part, we had some decent soybean sales and some decent wheat sales. And we have had a very steep decline over the last 2 weeks, and it's the end of the month, so I think there was some encouragement to lift some shorts, take some profits off the table, at least going into the end of the month. That usually is the case. As far as the fundamentals go, nothing has really changed, I don't think, other than the trade feels generally comfortable that we have a crop of something out there. And we're arguing, you know, probably a 5-bushel range or so in corn, what that will end up. We're arguing, you know, maybe a 3-bushel, 4-bushel range in soybeans, depending on how the growing season finishes up. We're going to see some acreage changes on the August report, and I suspect we'll see acreage changes all the way into the January report. Now today is, and we did have a nice little reversal to the upside on corn, where it would still take a miracle to close out the week higher, but you have to start someplace. And we basically came back to the point of breakout, and sometimes the market does that, where we broke out to the upside in middle June, and we came back to the point of breakout, and we posted a nice reversal to the upside. If we could see some follow-through advances tomorrow and, you know, cut the weekly loss, as well as the monthly loss, I think it would at least lay the foundation anyway that we could probably extend this short covering rally through next week, just in preparation of USDA's March 12th report, which is likely to have a few surprises in it or two.
Do you think at this point that any changes are more likely due to acreage changes, large changes that are, that is, as opposed to yield changes? I know it's going to be a combination of the two, but which one is more likely?
It's going to be a combination of the two. My guess is that beans has a pretty good risk of seeing some less acres. Now, USDA has compensated some for that on their July report, but I think you're going to see more of that. And, you know, I'm not necessarily sure the corn number is as solid as everybody thinks. You know, it could even come down a little bit. As far as yield goes, USDA, you know, the August number is kind of plant population multiplied by average year weight, and then they decide whether or not they want to fade it one way or the other. Same way with soybeans. I think they're going to come down, but they may step into it unless they're seeing some stuff out in the field that, you know, just forces them that they have to step into it in a little bigger way. I know the guys in the West are thinking that they have a super, super crop. We'll just see. I mean, we still have 6 weeks of growing season weather to go through, and we'll just end up seeing, you know, where we're at the end of the day. The thing that you got to keep in mind, I think, when you look at at the big picture is that the low that we made last October, we had a nice rally into late December, and then we had a strong decline here into June. The June low held above those October lows, and the highs that were made in early July topped out the late December highs that were posted last fall. So we are in a pattern of making higher highs and lower lows. Now, whether or not that continues, we'll have to see what happens over the next 6 weeks or so. But, you know, we do have the EU corn crop is going to come in 15 million tons less than last year. So there is going to be some imports into that country. So our corn exports may not be, USDA's number may not be that far off. And depending upon what we come in on yield, the supply-demand tables on both corn and soybeans look to be much tighter than what everybody was looking at back on April 1st before the growing season really got underway. So the thing that's kind of been a little bit of a killer here is the dollar was strong again today. But if people think today's dollar is strong, I guess they were born after 1990 because they don't know what a strong dollar really is. We're messing around here, you know, in the 80s and 90s. I guess we're at 97. But a strong dollar is 165 is a strong dollar, and I just don't see that. Yes, we are firmer than what we were for years ago, but I don't think we're dramatically priced ourselves out of the market. And I think the dollar, value of the dollar is somewhat overrated anyway. We've been in more of a, I mean, the basic problem we've had in commodities is the high prices that we had in the double O's. Had everybody overproduce everything from corn, soybeans, to crude oil, to gold, to silver, to copper. And we just got too much of it. And now we're paying the price of those higher prices. And now the function of the market is to figure out a way not to produce as much of that stuff and get it back into equilibrium.
It's doing a pretty good job. Hey, we'll check with you again next week. Thanks so much.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Let's take a look at today's agricultural news. The Senate may be set to take GMO labeling up in September. This follows the House approval of a similar bill this month. North Dakota Republican Senator John Hoeven is crafting the Senate's bill and trying to get Democrats there on board.
We're trying to find something that is bipartisan and, you know, a good solution. But at this point, it's still a work in progress over here. We'll look at the House bill, but we're still working on this side in terms of exactly how to approach it.
The House bill passed on a vote of 275 to 190 with 45 Democrats voting yes. House Republicans argue mandatory state labeling laws upend interstate commerce and that GMO labels scare consumers. Democrats argue consumers have the right to know what's in their food. Hoeven says he hasn't yet found a bipartisan answer in the Senate.
There's a clear recognition that you can't have 50 different state programs, that doesn't work. So then what's the right approach? What's the right solution in the Senate that will get the kind of bipartisan support? Because remember, we have to get to 60 votes, and so that's what we're working on.
Hoeven does not expect a two-party consensus on the Senate bill this month. He says it will likely happen after the summer break in September. But he does think the support of almost four dozen Democrats in the House will help gain Democratic support in the Senate for voluntary over-mandatory GMO labeling. Let's move now from Washington, D.C. to New Orleans, where Tulane University has announced the next phase of an international competition that will award $1 million to the entrepreneur, researcher, or inventor with the best plan to reduce the amount of crop fertilizer entering the world's lakes and oceans through stormwater runoff. The university contends such runoff from the nation's farmland is the primary cause of hypoxia. Those are the oxygen-deprived waters called the dead zone. The contest focus is toward reducing nutrient runoff from farm ground, and the finalists' proposals for reducing nutrient runoff will be on-farm tested. And finally today, we'll come back here to the state of Illinois, where the University of Illinois is reporting symptoms of sudden death syndrome in soybeans at a university research center. Last week, symptoms of SDS began to appear in April 15th planted soybeans at the U of I's Northwestern Research Center in Warren County. Symptoms began appearing approximately 3 weeks earlier than in 2014. Research has also shown that SDS may be more severe in fields that also have high populations of soybean cyst nematodes. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Gary Schnitke, ag economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I and the College of Aces. He's penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu on the working capital that producers use. Can you tell me about working capital, what it is, how you figure some ratios?
Yeah, working capital is the amount of money that a farmer or other business can use to meet short-term obligations. So it's either you either measure it with the current ratio, which is current assets divided by current liabilities, or you measure it as working capital per acre, which again is current assets minus current liabilities. What's important about both of those measures is that they've increased from 2006 to 2013. So during our period of good financial times, farmers built working capital, and that working capital provides buffers when returns are low.
You looked backwards to see what historically working capital was like in the farm business, farm management records kept here in the state of Illinois, I think from the mid-90s to the 2000s. What was that ratio, and how did it compare to the plateau era, that 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13?
Yeah, so working capital per acre was $179 per acre on average from 1996 through 2006. So during that period when we've had pretty tight financial times, farmers had on average 196 more current assets than current liabilities. That increased up to $600 an acre in 2012. So, a $400 increase. So that is a sizable number and a good buffer for now as we're looking at lower returns and short cash flows and negative cash flows.
And as we move into this process, you expect that working capital number to shrink?
Yes, we do expect it to shrink, and then actually we've begun to see it shrink. It shrank in 2013 and again in 2014. Not a lot, but some. One important note is as we're measuring working capital per acre, it's not likely to go back down to that 180 level that we saw during the 1996 through 2006 period because we have more costs now, so we have to maintain higher working capital per acre. So it's probably now 350 to 400, that sort of equivalent, but still have a sizable amount. And now farmers are going to have to begin to decide what they do with that working capital as we face negative returns.
Do you have items which producers can use to help them guide the process as to whether they should use it as a buffer or not?
Yeah, so right now the immediate thing would be to say you probably do want to reduce machinery purchases and family living if that's particularly machinery purchases. The tough part of that decision comes with cash rents, because there's always a risk when you lower cash rents that the farmer will lose a farmland. So the right decision for 2016, if you're just looking at the financial position, would maybe to lose the farmland if you can't lower the cash rent. But then you forego all future cash flows, and those are going to be the really tough decisions. The thing I would say when making that decision, I would use in my budgets, you know, a low $4 corn price in looking out in the future. And at those low $4 corn prices, and if you want to be more negative, go in the threes, average cash rents and other cash flows simply have to come down because the cost levels are above where our revenues are at.
Crop insurance and the brand new farm programs don't help make up that process at least in the early years. And does it depend on which of the two primary ag programs you take?
Yeah. So crop insurance, you know, adjust each year. So its projected price is set every year. So it's not really a help in these sort of longer term things. ARC will make payments and will buffer that. So, you know, in 2014, which payments will be received in 2015, the northern third of the state will get sizable payments. The rest of the state won't. 2015, we likely will see, you know, $60 to $70 an acre payments on ARC for corn and also for soybeans. But that's a buffer. It doesn't cover the entire magnitude of the loss, and they will go down over time. That's the way that program was designed to do, come down over time.
Gary Schnittke, of course, is an extension ag economist at the University of Illinois. Find him on the Farm Doc Daily website. On the phone line is Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks for being with us. I know you're in Quincy today. Hopefully you can stick with us for a bit, not because I know that's a pretty tough service area. What the crop conditions look like on the way there?
Well, I definitely saw a little bit of hit and miss. I saw some fields actually that weren't planted in a few places and some beans that have been planted recently. I would say generally it's pretty common to what the state of Illinois is. I'll see a few good fields here and there. But generally speaking, I wasn't quite as impressed as I thought I might be in the western part of the state, because some people, you know, indicated it was a lot better than what we were in other places.
Do you have a feeling that fundamentally the supply side of the marketplace has changed at all?
Not really. I think that a lot of what we've been going through has to do with, you know, outside influences. Obviously, the Chinese, you know, slowing down. And to me, I think a lot of people are looking at weather as being really good for the corn crop. But, I mean, a lot of places I've been, I really don't see that weather's going to help out a whole lot with those particular people. Now, there's ideal conditions across the Midwest, but we found out our situation was tighter June 30th, and I think we verified it with the next report there. To me, as we move forward, this corn market's probably got a really good chance of rebounding, and we may have to store after harvest, but fundamentally, we're still in the same spot.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yep. Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon, or rather Thursday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Back in 2 minutes with the weather forecast here on willag.org.
It's National Cheesecake Day. It's also St. Abdon's Day, patron of barrel makers. The Romans used barrels as early as the 3rd century AD. By the mid-20th century, barrels had largely lost their appeal, except for the aging of spirits, including wine and whiskey. On this day in agricultural history in 1739, Caspar Wiskar founded the first successful large-scale glass factory in the U.S., much of his trade was with the production of wine bottles. In 1838, it supposedly rained frogs in London. In 1849, Jacob Perkins died. Perkins was issued the first U.S. patent for a refrigerating machine. It used sulfuric ether compression. Perkins also produced the first nails, which were both cut and headed by machine in America. He also patented a hot air furnace. In 1898, cornflakes were invented by William Kellogg, 4 years after he and his brother John Harvey accidentally invented a flaked cereal process based on wheat. In 1906, the brothers founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflake Company, which is known today as Kellogg's. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenora, T-Storm Weather in Chicago, now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Tell me what you think the forecast looks like over the next several days.
Well, we're in a transitional period. We've had some very warm to hot weather over the last 5 to 7 days or so. And as we move forward, we'll still stay warm, but not quite as warm as we have been. One of the big differences between the air masses that are coming up and the ones that just occurred are that humidity levels will be a bit lower as we go forward. What that means for corn and soybeans is that temperatures will tend to fall a little bit more at night than they have been. So we'll see minimums in the 60s as opposed to the 70s for the most part over the next 4 to 5 days, and high temperatures will top out anywhere from the low 80s to the low 90s, depending on exactly where you are. Now, we're not looking for a whole lot in the way of rain over the next 4 to 5 days. We could see a few thunderstorms here or there once we get into the weekend, but we're not looking for these well-organized large thunderstorm clusters that we've seen several times over the last couple of months. So that kind of takes us through Monday. After that, we do see a fairly significant pattern change that will last for at least 5 to 7 days. A large upper-level system will envelop southeast Canada, and that will turn winds in from the north across a big portion of the central United States. We'll see temperatures fall to below normal levels for a change across a big chunk of the Corn Belt once we get into Tuesday and Wednesday. That will last, again, for around 5 to 7 days, and during that period, we'll see highs in the 70s and 80s with lows generally in the 50s. That's around 3 to 6 degrees below the climatological norms. And because of that, we're not looking for much in the way of heat stress for corn and soybeans. The bigger uncertainty revolves around rainfall. With this pattern, we're not looking for quite as much in the way of rain, but there are some uncertainties. The big uncertainty being exactly how large will that upper level system be in southeast Canada. If it's a little bit bigger than we think, then that would tend to pull the cool air a tiny bit further to the south and then keep best rain chances to the south of most corn and soybeans. On the other hand, if it were to move further to the north, that would lead to slightly warmer weather than we're currently thinking about, and that would also lead to more rain. But no matter how you draw it up, it's hard to draw a hot, dry scenario or a cool, wet scenario. If we turn hot, then we'll turn wet, simply because we'll start pulling some of that humidity further to the north and bring that storm track right back into the Corn Belt. If it turns cool, we'll shift that storm track to the south, and that'll leave us dry. By the time you add all this up, the corn and soybean picture for next week is not looking all that threatening. As long as we get a little bit of rain, which we are expecting, we're generally looking for cooler than normal temperatures with near normal rainfall over the first 7 to 10 days of August. All the details will take a little bit to fine tune, but that's just kind of the way it looks right now based on where the jet stream should line up and based on where the southern edge of coolness should be.
Then very quickly, will that be mostly clear skies and sunshine with that cool temperature, except when we're raining?
More than likely, yes. We're not looking for a lot in the way of extensive cloud cover.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media and helps us wrap up this Thursday edition. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.